Good evening, and welcome to Night Gallery.
Thank you, Rod. And I want to welcome everyone to Midnight Viewing, where once a month we talk all about your follow-up to The Twilight Zone, Rod Serling's Night Gallery.
They say it's Rod Serling's Night Gallery, and it isn't really Rod Serling's Night Gallery. It's somebody else's.
Oh, we know. We talk about it a lot. Your curators at Midnight Viewing are the projection booth's Mike White.
What can happen to human beings when trust is wiped out by suspicion?
And CultureCast's Chris Stashew.
Small boy encased in a crystal ball.
And I'm Father Malone.
The kind of thing that usually infests nightmares.
Join us monthly at Midnight Viewing, the Night Gallery podcast at WeirdingWayMedia.com.
Doesn't remotely belong to me. I have no proprietary interest in that at all.
Investigation into the shadowy corners of the globe, where our haunted past meets our startling future.
All right, here we go. It is April the 27th. I have just landed at Logan International Airport here in dreary Boston, Massachusetts. And this is August Ward recording. Hi, Shelley. Thanks again for taking this assignment at such short notice. You are the only producer I trust with this piece. I'm going to be doing things a little differently with this one. There's still going to be plenty of interviews and personal notes and wild sound pieces to wade through, but rather than record months later back in some airless studio, I'm going to do my best to put my Ivy League education on display and actually narrate on the fly. And to that end, I bought a new recorder. And it is programmable, so whenever I finish a session, it should make a cue sound. Like this. How's that? Isn't that great? You can choose any sound you want, and I thought this one is appropriately spooktacular, given our subject matter. Anyway, my mysterious benefactor has spared every expense for this investigation. I flew here coach, and now I'm in the parking lot of what must be the worst rental car agency in all of Massachusetts. I was shocked when the ancient rental car shuttle bus didn't need to be lifted by the passengers and run here Flintstone style. And now I'm finally at my rental car. It is a Ford Taurus, an older model, not surprisingly, and covered in the kind of late spring grime I had mercifully forgotten about. And the interior absolutely stinks. I don't know that for certain because I haven't gotten inside it yet. I'm just guessing. All right, Shelley, here we go.
Route 1 is a Massachusetts mainstay. It connects at the Rhode Island border and wends its way through the eastern portion of the state, terminating in New Hampshire. Somewhere at the halfway point, if you take exit 25A and head east, you'll find yourself on the Massachusetts coast, just north of Marblehead, a city that spawned an entirely colloquial non sequitur, Light Dawns on Marblehead, and south of Kingsport lies the famous and, in some cases, infamous town of Arkham. We're a few minutes from the town line, which is as good a time as any, dear listeners, to introduce you to your narrator. Storyteller? I don't know. Either way, my name is August Ward. I've been a radio journalist, podcast guest, and overall raconteur for the last 12 years. Who better than a one-time local boy to investigate the sometimes intriguing, sometimes frustrating, and at other times inspiring town of paranormal rumor and old-world conjecture of Arkham, Mass. We're crossing from Swampscott and into Arkham proper right now. There's that familiar signpost, Welcome to Arkham, with the town's insignia, a Shawmut Indian's feather, encircled by the outline of a cod. The sign is fairly plain, given the likes of its closest neighbor, Salem, Massachusetts, which features a cartoon witch astride a broom flying through the night sky as its governmental seal. Salem has always been Arkham's older brother on a national scale. Better known, better regarded, always more fascinating to the casual observer. Every Halloween, the entirety of the U.S. population seems to funnel into its supposedly haunted borders. Hundreds of books, films, and television series have been devoted to its dark history and purported supernatural underpinnings. But Arkham, always more diligent, more focused, and overall far more ignored, as any good younger sibling tends to be, bears Salem no ill will. To be honest, growing up in Arkham, we were always glad Salem drew such notoriety. Better the public seize on them and their freaky past, than delve too deeply into our own.
Hey, Shelley. Our mysterious benefactor, in his endless attempts to save a buck, booked me into an Airbnb instead of a hotel. I was pretty unhappy when I saw that on my itinerary. Sharing a bathroom and eating communal breakfast with a bunch of tourists doesn't appeal in any way, but whatever. It's a job, not a vacation. You know, they say you can't go home again, and that's a sentiment I've always known to be true. Compounding it in my case is the fact that my parents moved to Scottsdale a few months after I went to college. They passed away a few years ago, so even my newly adopted home feels unwelcoming. I haven't been there in a few years, and I certainly haven't been back to Arkham in well over a decade. I never imagined I'd be home. You can't see it, but I'm making air quotes. So it's surreal to be back in such familiar environs, made even more so by the fact that said Airbnb just so happens to be my childhood home. The outside looks great, I must admit. The owner replaced the traditional New England wooden shingles with some sort of aluminum siding, which is probably a good idea, given what a bitch it is to replace them any time the weather gets bad, and my father never seemed to get around to. And it's a bright shade of yellow, which it had once been the kind of deep chocolate that most houses in this region seem to favor. The owner is sweet, a fading ginger named Megan Halsey, who must have been a stunner back when Nixon was in the White House. If I'm being totally honest, she's kind of a stunner even now. I tried to get her to install me in my old bedroom, but that's a sitting room now, so instead she gave me the spare bedroom on the third floor. Or, as my parents used to call it, get the hell out of that room, it's not for you.
It is 4 a.m. Sorry it's so late, Shelley. Wait, no, I rescind that apology. It's not 4 a.m. there. Knowing you, you're listening to this at 2 a.m. tops. Anyway, I was sleeping pretty hard when I heard a scratching noise somewhere in my room. I was hoping to get it on tape, but just like the sound your car makes until you get it to the mechanic, it's disappeared completely. But my magical new recorder does have a voice activation setting. I'll probably turn it on before I go to sleep from now on. At worst, it'll be a wake-up call for Miss Halsey that the exterminator is in her future. At best, some cool, spooky atmosphere for the podcast. There. It's on now, I hope. Good morning, Shelley, and it is a beautiful morning. I'm spending it soaking up the old hometown atmosphere. I'm sure the notion that everything you grew up seeing seems smaller when you return to it as an adult, but it's no less shocking a sensation to experience. Thought I'd run into some familiar faces. A few townies have waved in my direction, but I didn't recognize any. Haven't recognized anyone. Odd. In any event, at 3 today, I've got an interview at the Arkham Historical Society with a Shirley Frohmeyer. These small-town crones do love to talk, and ramble, and drone on. So prepare for a deluge of minutiae. Wish me luck.
Wow. This is germane to nothing at all, Shelley. I'm just amazed. That beautiful sound you're hearing is Christ Church's tower bell, toning out the time of day. I'm sure adults have managed to tune it out of their consciousness, like people who live near airports tend to forget the endless rumble of jet engines. But as a kid growing up here, those bells felt like a lifeline. When you heard only two bells, there was no sweeter sound in the world. The William Dyer Memorial High School's day ends at 2. I don't know why I'm so shocked that the bell tower is still in operation. I guess everyone believes their hometown will fall apart without them. In this case, pleasantly surprised that it isn't true.
Hey, Shelley. I'm actually a little early, so I'm wandering around inside the voluminous Miskatonic University library stacks. The Historical Society is housed in the same building as the library, and I realize that I've never actually been in here. Miskatonic's library contains one of the world's most well-regarded collections of ancient and first edition texts, and the place does not disappoint. It's all wrought iron spiral staircases and an innumerable row of bookcases. I get the sense you can get lost in here very easily. It's well maintained from what I can see, but there's an odor of decay, like a basement after a flood. And the lighting is, and let's be generous and say it's atmospheric. I don't know if these bulbs are on a dimmer or what, or if they keep it at such low levels to discourage you from spending too much time in here, but it's off-putting in ways I find hard to describe. Of course, rumors have abounded about the secret library contained somewhere inside here where you can find forbidden tomes that exist nowhere else. And one book in particular that...
Are you a student here, young man?
Oh, no, I'm just having a look around. I've got an appointment with the Historical Society.
Follow me, please.
Yeah, of course. Okay, Shelley, so this won't be a total waste. I'm going to give a bit of history, and I'm going to give you the full story later. Ready? I'm currently standing at a bit of an anomaly. While Arkham is bounded by the Atlantic Ocean on the east, an old-growth forest to the north, south, and west, the town itself is fairly urban, bordering on industrial when you approach its center. And yet currently beneath my feet is a verdant green lawn that stretches for many city blocks, all the way down to Garrison and hemmed in on either side by College and Church streets. This is the quadrangle. Most similar institutions simply refer to it as a quad of Miskatonic University. It isn't as old as Harvard or well-known as MIT, but Miskatonic University is a venerable and venerated higher education mainstay. Founded originally as Arkham College back in 1740, it became Miskatonic in 1796 after the largesse of Arkham's first true industrialist, Jebediah Orne, and today boasts accreditation of thousands of PhDs. Housed within its gambrel roof is the Arkham Historical Society, which was to be the purpose of my visit.
Hey, let me tell you over there.
Yeah, okay, I'm going. I'm going. God damn it. All right, Shelley. Forgive the background noise in here, but then again, this is just a note. It's not for publication. I had to get something to eat, so I'm currently at Consalvi's, which is a pizza place I used to frequent as a kid. You know when that argument comes up, which is better, New York or Chicago pizza? I know they're both wrong. It's Consalvi's here in Arkham. Anyway, I was escorted from the library to the Historical Society. Shirley Frohmeyer was much younger than I expected given that name. I anticipated an old crone, but she couldn't have been more than 28 or so. But she was clad in a business suit that fairly screamed, "Don't waste my time," so... Anyway, she asked me for my credentials, which I showed her, such as they are, then asked me the areas of interest as far as the interview. I should point out that she told me to keep the recorder off until the interview was to begin, which is why you're now getting this secondhand. She was fine with the basics of town history and its rivalry with Salem. She even seemed eager to dish on that subject, but when I brought up the actual subject matter, her demeanor went black. She was polite about it, but told me that she'd be unable to help me and was booked solid for the next few weeks. Suspicious? Yeah, I'd say. I'd also say that I'm clearly on the right track with the subject matter. I don't think I've ever seen a scholarly dissemination of the tragedy. Hell, even a cursory online search of Mae's Eve will produce zero results. And now I'm going to turn off the recorder, because as soon as I said Mae's Eve, I got quite a few dirty looks from my fellow diners, and they are continuing to stare right now.
The hell was that about? I've been in weird situations before. Remember that piece about San Pedro meth heads? Man, this is how surreal it felt. I'm currently driving to my rented room in my childhood home, and that seems totally normal now. I don't know if you can hear, but compounding everything, we just got hit with a freak New England spring storm, and it looks like it's gonna blow for the rest of the evening. I'm glad I ate, because once I get into my room, I fully intend on remaining there till the morning. Even without the Historical Society interview, I still have a ton to say on the subject matter, so I'm gonna do my best to salvage the day once I get there. Okay, Shelley. A little bit of notes, and I'll let you know when we're going into the actual narration. Like I mentioned, this storm has descended like the wrath of God, and everyone in town is huddling in their domiciles. I've got my windows closed, but somehow, it still seems wet in here. And since Miss Halsey seems singularly determined to keep her heating bills down, it's chilly enough that I'm wearing a sweater and wrapping myself in a blanket. As I mentioned, I'm on the spare bedroom up on the third floor, which is a room I barely remember entering as a child. I do have vague memories of weird bits of my parents' own childhood items being stored in here. Dolls, mainly. I guess it was more my mom's than my dad's. I suspected that my parents had been hoping for another child. Dolls would indicate a girl, and this was to be their intended bedroom. When it became apparent that I was going to be their sole creation, they regarded the room with, at best, disinterest. And, at worst, disgust. Probably became a symbol of their waning fertility. In any event, they were very discouraging whenever I'd ventured up here. To that end, the citizenry of Arkham's sudden decision to discourage my investigation hasn't changed the fact that there's plenty about its dark history I readily recall. I guess I'm gonna start the actual narration here. Arkham, Massachusetts is home to the country's oldest asylum. The Arkham Sanitarium has been in constant operation since its creation in the early 1700s. The building was relocated twice and currently looms above the quaintly named Hangman's Hill on the north side. Whoa! There goes the power. Hold on a second. Sure, Miss Halsey intended the plethora of scented candles littered around the room as decorative pieces, but they're coming in handy right now. Anyway, sorry, back to the narration. Hold on. Arkham experienced a typhoid outbreak back in 1905. A pandemic along the entire eastern seaboard can't be pinned on this town per se, but there were disturbing events that took place here during that time. Evidently, a Miskatonic medical student seized on the opportunity of so many freshly dead bodies to perform what can euphemistically be called experimentation. His motives have been lost to history, though they've been described as everything from altruistic, dissecting the bodies to better understand human anatomy and further the field of surgery, to downright diabolical. Many were convinced he was attempting to reanimate those corpses. That student, Herbert West was his name, disappeared entirely, so we can only guess at his true intent. But he did have a conspirator. Dan Kane. He was convicted of West's murder and then shuffled off to the sanitarium, where he spent the remainder of his life babbling about catacombs that run beneath the town, and of blood sacrifices that must be maintained to satisfy the Old Ones. Those are his words, the Old Ones, which is a phrase not unknown to me. I heard it every now and again as a kid, in snatches of conversation among adults that would cease immediately once they realized you were listening. I always assumed they meant the St. Mary's Retirement Home over on Boundary Street, or at least referencing Arkham's ancestors. Whether that meant the early settlers or the Shawmut tribe before them didn't matter to me. It just meant old people. But now, I'm not so sure. It may or may not have something to do with the most interesting piece of twisted history here in Arkham. Not the last, mind you. One could do hundreds of these podcasts about the isolated weirdness that's occurred within city limits, and you'd never want for new material. But the one that has always fascinated me, the one I came here to shed light on, is the phenomenon known as Maze Eve. It is literally the last day of April, or night, technically. Every decade or so since the town's incorporation, on that night particularly, a group of children go missing. It can be anywhere from one or two in some cases, or, like once in the mid-19th century, when over 30 children disappeared in one evening. And I do mean disappeared. Not one bone or tooth or fragment of clothing has ever been found in the city or along the shore. Now, I'd say it was a serial killer prowling the streets of Arkham with a fixation on the last day of April, but the sheer span of time that these disappearances have occurred rules that out. And predatory murder isn't hereditary, so it's not as if it's some lunatic family's legacy to the town. Those kids are just gone. I don't have all the specific names and dates in front of me. I'm probably going to stop by the public library tomorrow to nail down that data. But I assure you, it is a number so high that you'll be shocked that a major investigation has yet to be mounted. Even more shocking is the town's reaction. A collective shrug. What are you gonna do? It's Chinatown. What are you gonna do? It's Arkham.
The program will resume momentarily. But we at Dark Destinations need to comment on what you're about to hear. Our reporter, August Ward, received a phone call, and as best as we can surmise, the caller wished neither to be identified nor put on the record for this piece. Given that Mr. Ward has recently gone missing, we can only assume his motive with regard to recording the call. We err on the side of Mr. Ward's proven integrity. And given the mysterious circumstances of his disappearance, We believe the call itself worthy of examination. However, the caller's name has been redacted and his voice altered electronically to preserve his identity.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning.
Augie, is it you?
Who are you, Mr. Private Number?
Augie, why'd you come back? You were supposed to stay gone. Don't you know the date? Don't you know?
I am well aware of the date. What I'd like to know is who's calling.
Where are you? Tell me you're not back in the house. Oh, God. You can't get her back. You know that.
Can't get who back? Listen, if you're not going to identify yourself, this call is over, and I'm going back to sleep.
You don't remember. Oh, I guess that's good. But you can't stay. Get out of the house. Get out of the city.
I'm getting a little tired of Arkham's treatment of me.
Good. Go.
I don't know what you remember about me, but I'm not that kid anymore. And I'm not going to be bullied out of town.
You're the same. I can hear it in your voice. You can't change. It won't let you. And it's all going to start again. God damn you.
Well, thanks for calling.
For your own sake, Augie, leave. For the town's sake. For your sister.
What the hell does that mean? Hello? God damn it. You get all that, Shelley? Remind me, we're in the 21st century now, right? Lunatics. It's fine, I only need 3 hours of sleep. Good night, Shelley. Morning, Shelley. I had intended to attack the day, but given how little sleep I got, and the fact that I have a bit of a slow and grinding headache inexplicably, I'm taking things a bit slow this morning. I'm still at my house. Well, it's Miss Halsey's house now. Power is back on, but the weather has not improved, which is fine by me. Less animals roaming the streets when I finally do get motivated. The third floor doesn't have a bathroom, so I've been schlepping my toiletries up and down the stairs. When I return to the room from my shower, I drop my aftershave, and thanks to its super sleek cylindrical shape, it promptly rolled away faster than I could keep up, and it disappeared beneath a bookcase in the corner of the room. There was no way I could reach it. So I moved the bookcase. And, you ready for this? I found a door. What's so shocking about that? Well, I'm glad you asked. The door is 3 feet high, like a closet for a doll or a small child. What on earth could it be for? And why on earth did I know nothing about it? You spend enough time somewhere, say 18 years, you figure you'd have pretty much everything in your immediate surroundings mapped out. It's locked, I tried, and Miss Halsey is a scrupulous cleaner, so I couldn't see any lines of disturbed dust to indicate the last time it was open. Could be decades. There is a fair amount of pitting in the wooden floor where the door swings out, so it definitely has been in use. I'm sure you're screaming at the computer right about now, Shelley. What does this have to do with anything? Probably nothing. But it's another bizarre aspect of this homecoming. And I feel like I ought to document it. That's all. Hey, Shell. You know, whenever I'm in Boston, I always marvel how that city seems to straddle the 19th, 20th, and 21st centuries. It's a neat balancing act. And given their geographic proximity, I always feel like Arkham manages the same nifty trick, and so far that feeling has been borne out. Except here, inside the Arkham Public Library. I'm currently scanning through news items on a microfiche machine. Digital, you say? Never heard of it. Boy, you will not hear me complain about substandard Wi-Fi speeds ever again. Having said that, prepare yourself for an onslaught of frustration anyway. They've got films of the Arkham Gazette going back to 1883, but there is not one major article about May's Eve. There are a smattering of missing persons notices throughout April every decade or so, but nothing tying these seemingly isolated instances together. I'm beginning to wonder if I didn't allow a fictional regional yarn used to scare children to coalesce into a real and ongoing problem in my mind. If I remember correctly, there should be a section of books dedicated to local history in the stacks downstairs. I'm going to have to check it, but I'm not hopeful. But then I do have to find something. Just between you and me, Shelley. I already cashed my check for this assignment. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm turning it off. Shelly, I'm back in my house. The windows are shut tight against the rain and the wind, and I have a steaming cup of clam chowder from the King's Head pub in front of me. Is that New England or Manhattan? You should never ask a New Englander. New York can keep their clam ketchup soup. So, the library closed up early today. How unusual. But before they tossed me out into the rain, I did manage to check out a volume of Arkham Lore, imaginatively titled Arkham Lore. It's not exactly a dissertation-worthy look into the folk tales and true crimes of my hometown, but it does at least provide a little bit of illumination on May's Eve. Got its own chapter. A slight 3 pages. But beggars can't be choosers when those same pages assuage the fear that I'm losing my mind. It has some names and dates, which I'm going to have to follow up on, but it's mostly a compendium of crackpot theories on the mystery's origins and potential meanings. They're hardly worth mentioning. So why do I sound so chipper? Honestly, the chowder's going a long way to lighten the mood, but more importantly, on the last of those scant pages about May's Eve, someone has written in the margins. A someone I'm going to have to try and track down. I don't think asking who took out a book previous to you is going to breach any librarian book borrower confidentiality agreement, but regardless, whoever it was has written Miskatonic Library, Lower Level, and underneath that, they've scrawled 2 words in Latin. Infinitum nihil. I assume that's a book title because beneath that they've written the Dewey Decimal Number. Now, as with everything I've encountered so far, I'm not rejoicing just yet. But it's a good lead, I think. And I'm strangely hopeful. I just have to figure out a way to get in there undetected. But that is for tomorrow. I'm going to put the voice activation thing on again before I go to sleep. I hope we've gotten something good, but... oh, I'm sure you'll find something. Night, Shelly.
In the days of sailing ships, people from all over the world were coming to America looking for a new start in life.
Oh, sorry, Shelley. That is the opening to an old ghost story record I had when I was a kid. It seems wildly appropriate given my current locale. I am no longer bound by the laws of land. Well, not really. I'm still in territorial waters, but I am at sea, currently chugging out of Arkham Harbor. I always feel as though I think better when I'm near the ocean. And since I haven't yet deduced a plan to get back inside Miskatonic, I figured I couldn't get nearer than gliding through the surf. Hopefully it'll help. You know, out here amidst the wind and waves, it's hard not to recall the magnificent vessels that once prowled up and down the coast. The Mayflower, Old Ironsides, and the ship I'm aboard now, the SS Hot for Teacher. I think it's safe to assume which side of the Van Halen, then Hagar fence the captain's feet stand. Just so you know, this isn't entirely a gotta-clear-out-the-cobwebs, navel-gazing pleasure cruiser in any show. As worthless as the suppositions in that book Arkham Lore most likely are,
they are worth a bit of investigating. One in particular concerns a bit of real estate not far from the coast. Its official name is St. Dismas Island. Dismas was the penitent thief crucified beside Jesus, by the way. Long before that, the Shamit tribe called it... Well, I know I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, so I'll just give it to you in English. They called it the Top of the Skull. Now, I don't think they meant any menace with that name. It's exactly how it does appear on certain days. The top of some massive skull from some cyclopean monstrosity that floats gently just below the surface. Though, as a kid, I was unaware of either name. Locals just called it Innsmouth University. Innsmouth is a rival seaport town north of here. Not that there's been much of a rivalry in the past century or so. As Arkham prospered, Innsmouth withered. If there's a level beneath blue collar, that's them. Most cities on the coast view them with a jaundiced eye. But whatever it's called, that island is where I'm headed. It's a snipe hunt, I'm sure. But there are worse ways I could be spending my time. When viewed from the mainland, the western portion of St. Dismas Island isn't much to look at. When you're standing on it, that initial impression is borne out. The beach, such as it is entirely rock. Or rather, thousands of them. And none too stable, as my sopping wet pant cuffs can attest. It's low tide at the moment, so you can get a good look at them. They're mostly royal blue, gradually becoming onyx at the shoreline. Though that might give you the impression that they gleam. They do not. The only thing glinting on this beach is a beer bottle that's washed ashore. And even that looks sickly. The rocks continue up out of the water for a half dozen feet, where they meet yet more stone. This one is solid, the island itself, and rises up in a nearly symmetrical dome that blots out the horizon and keeps the eastern half of the island from view. Eons of wind and wave have polished the surface of the hill to a dusty ivory hue. Honestly, nothing seems very out of the ordinary. That is, till you trudge up the hill here and crest the top of the top of the skull. You're met with a fairly sheer cliff face. It doesn't look so treacherous, only about a 20-foot drop, but if you came out here on a moonless night, you might be in trouble. Lucky for me, there seems to be a path that leads down along the southern rim, and thank God, because I am unprepared to improvise a rope using my coat, scarf, and socks. From what I can see, the eastern part of the isle stretches away and terminates in a near point. I get the impression that seen from above, the entirety of the island would resemble an ornate medieval dagger. And in stark contrast to the western side, there's quite a bit of dense vegetation sprawling its length. And apparently, if you make your way to the edge of the island's northeastern point and climb down another dozen feet, there are three openings in the rock that lead to three caves. Captain Perkheiser of the SS Hot for Teacher told me that they'd be visible now because the tide's low. Which means the rest of the time, the entrances are covered by the ocean. Which also means I better get moving, since I left my scuba gear back in Venice. Hey Shelley, make a note to remind me to contact Mildred Fitzmeyer. She runs that botany podcast, Flora the Explorer. She'd have a field day out here. I'm taking pictures, but I'm not sure they do justice. The north and south ends of the island, at the edges, are covered in beach grass, which isn't so unusual, except beach grass tends to grow in clumps, with sporadic blades stabbing up through the sand dunes. This grass is lush, with thousands of blades jutting crazily in all directions. It's a lawn the Adams family would cultivate. But as you get near the center of the island, these plants are odd. Part fern, part moss, part I have no goddamned idea. And they're growing without the benefit of any discernible soil, just sprouting from the sediment. Ordinarily there'd be a howling ocean wind, but it's muted by the top of the skull into a gentle breeze. These plants fairly undulate in it. If it was a cloudier day, you'd swear they were breathing. Okay, Shelley. I reached the northeast edge, and just a cursory glance proved that Arkham lore wasn't lying. Neither was Captain Perkheiser, for that matter. Just below the lip, there are three cave entrances. I was trying to figure out a way to lower myself down when a notion took hold. Intuition, maybe. Even a piss-poor reporter like me gets them from time to time. Though really, it felt like I felt this morning when I stepped outside, like a metal filing pulled toward some invisible magnet. And I found myself heading here to the southeast side of the island instead. And I'm glad I did. Well, not glad, but gratified. It took more than a glance. I had to really study the wave-worn stone, but then I saw it.
Another entrance. Just one. I doubt I'm the first to discover it, but there hadn't been any mention of it from anyone or any source beforehand. And who knows if it doesn't just dead-end a few feet from view, but we're gonna find out. I'd say I've got about 45 minutes to get in and out before the ocean swallows it again. Wish me luck. It took a lot longer to get down here than I expected. I'm going to put the recorder in my shirt pocket, so I apologize if the sound goes in and out. This entrance doesn't dead-end at all. It goes in much further than I can see. Score one for me in remembering a flashlight. I'm heading in now. The passage is quite narrow. It's on an incline, heading up. I expected to see some graffiti or trash or something, but it looks like no one's been here in some time. At least not teenagers. The walls are smooth. I imagine that's from centuries of seawater eroding the jagged spots. Something squished beneath my feet. And it's a dead fish. Must have been trapped here when the water receded. And I'm hoping that's the last animal I encounter. The passage is too cramped to let anything big in here, but even a small shark could do enough damage to strand me. God, the incline is really steep. It must thread its way through the heart of the island. What the hell? Hello? I'm looking inside a cavern. I mean, that's the only word for it. But look at that. It's smooth and ridged at the same time. The ceiling. The roof, I guess. It's about 10 feet from the floor. But the walls, I'd say the room circumference is about 25 feet. And circumference is right, because it's perfectly round. As far as the flashlight allows, anyway. I'm gonna have to go in there. I really don't want to go in there. Okay, it's heavy. Heavy. That's what it feels like. That makes sense. I don't know. Can you hear that? Is that just in my head? The floor is not quite polished, but almost. There's a symbol carved in it. Did the Shama tribe do this? God, it seems like such a Herculean effort. I mean, get in here when the tide is out, work as fast as you can. I mean, the equipment alone. There's no other adornment, really, except... What is that? There's a recess in the wall here. There's a book... Parchment. No, it's a folded map. And there's a small carving in the rock here, just inside this shelf. Nihil infinitum. Just like the book at Miskatonic. Maybe this is the book. God, it's old. Hand-bound. Wish I brought a plastic bag. I want it to disintegrate. It's handwritten. I gotta say, this is about a century or two old. The handwriting started off ornate, calligraphic, but it seems it's been updated through the years. What is that? What is that sound? Maybe there's a methane leak in here. I just don't feel. Well, what I wouldn't give for a chair. The thought of sitting on this stone floor absolutely sickens me. Huh? The boat. Okay. God, it must be later than I thought. Gotta get out of here. Hey, Shelley. Back in the car. Got the heater on full. Man, ocean damp seeps right through your skin. I've got a chill I cannot shake. I don't quite know where to go. Thought about toting my new discoveries under my arm like a professor and just strolling into Miskatonic U's library right now. But I'm not exactly seeking any undue attention. I just want a minute of quiet so I can go over this book and map. I may have instinctively made the decision already,
as I seem to be on the route back to my house. Well, to the Airbnb. Maybe Miss Halsey will open up the sitting room and I'll be able to relax in my old bedroom for a bit. I don't think I'd mind that at all. Hold on. I'm on my street. My house sits about 3/4 of the way down the block. There is a small group of people in front of it. They're all talking with Miss Halsey. I wish I could hear them. It is quite an animated discussion. Why do I have the feeling that I'm the subject? You know, I think I'm just going to back up and swing on by here a little later. I swore I would never come back to my grammar school. I hated every moment. But here I am. Parked outside it, anyway. I don't really have any desire to go inside, but I gotta say, as I was driving past it, I began to feel, I want to say, welcome or comforted? And there's something to that, but it's more like necessary. That's probably not the right word either. The kids seem pretty happy. They must be on recess. And good for them that they're doing it right now. The marine layer burned off to what should have been a bright sunny day, but it's darkening out. Prematurely. That can only mean rain. Alright, I'm just gonna push these seats back here, and I'm gonna try and read over this book and make some sense of the map. I'll let you know. It's not the ocean fog or the inevitable rainstorm chilling me now, Shelley. It's because of this goddamn book. I've been sitting here for, Jesus, an hour now. I started with the map, and I guess I'll have to start there too, because that book... Shelley, I'd appreciate it if you don't share these sound files with anyone. I think they'd make a hell of a good case for me being committed. Anyway, the map. I suspect it's older than the book, though it's been lovingly cared for. And it's been added to and updated over the years. The different shades of ink and how badly they faded tells me it's been redrawn at least 4, maybe 5 times. The oldest version is a simple topographical sketch of the area. I can make out the harbor and Dismas Island. There are swirls indicating the heavily forested area surrounding the town, and a dramatic slash showing where the Miskatonic River cuts through. The next layer of ink is the puzzling part, or one of them. Whoever did it added what are clearly paths crisscrossing the town. But they don't correspond to any roads that exist now, or to the best of my knowledge, ever. And the Shamut tribe didn't make thoroughfares. They built their villages to complement nature, not dominate it. If all that had been added were these mystery paths, it wouldn't be so confounding. But the next layer are rough sketches of landmarks more than familiar to me. Christchurch, Foundry, the docks, that's definitely Miskatonic University. What's unusual about that is, whoever drew them didn't bother to draw the streets as we know it. And the fact that there's even yet a further updated layer of ink, this one is unmistakably ballpoint pen. And they didn't bother to add them either, even though now they've included the grammar school and the playground out near Hangman's Hill, it makes those paths even more interesting. What the hell are they? I'm pretty sure I know. Pretty sure Dan Kane knew, too. I think they're tunnels. I think they're everywhere. Deeper than the sewers and the runoffs. Unspeakably old. Who would dig them? And more importantly, who's been keeping them a secret all these years? I mean, if it's true, my God, you could move anywhere unhindered at any time. The book. It's not prose, not a theological treatise. It's an obscene census. A loathsome, centuries-spanning list. Let me read you a sample from the first couple of pages. These are undated. Bartholomew Dudley, son of John Dudley and Goody Dudley. Verity Howe, daughter of Widow Howe. Anne Bradstreet, daughter of Mr. Reverend Bradstreet and Goody Bradstreet. There are 6 more after that, all in one entry. 9. 9 children. Let's flip ahead, shall we? Humphrey Fenn, son of Mr. Richard Fenn and Mrs. Mary Fenn. Walter Marshall, son of Mr. Philip Marshall. There's 10... 16 more. These are all dated.
1720. April 30th, 1720. Aaron Rodgers. Whoever took the mantle up here dispensed with the parents' names. Henry Scudder, Della Woodbridge, Walter Mildmay. There's too many to count. April 30th, 1855. It goes on and on, quill and ink to pen and pot, to the more recent decades. The writing less ornate, less structured. First names only for a lot of them. And not as many, but still. This book lays bare May's Eve. Hundreds, maybe 1,000 names. Names of children. It doesn't give any hint as to why or how. But it confirms design. Selection. Even as lunatic as it is to consider the sheer number of names, that's not what's chilling me right now. It's the final entry. April 30th, 1999. One name. The author has taken pains to write in cursive and has reverted to the old and sensible method of first and last name followed by their parents. Virginia Ward, daughter of Mr. Stephen Ward and Mrs. Tabitha Ward. I don't know any Virginia, and there were no other Wards living in Arkham at that time. I know, I did a family tree in high school that year, traced the Wards back to Aberdeen, Scotland, and I scoured the Arkham registries hoping to find a lost cousin or an eccentric old aunt. None. Just my family. August Ward, that's me, and my parents, Stephen and Tabitha. Oh, and the map? Each person who updated it updated the tunnels as well, scratching in new tributaries and veins beneath the surface of Arkham. They spread out to the neighborhoods that sprang up after World War II. Now, I can't be 100% sure without an urban chart overlaid, but it looks like one of them goes straight to my house. Shelley, I'm back at my house. There was no crowd outside, and there's no sign of Miss Halsey. I already packed up my stuff and put it in the car. Impossibly, this will be the second time I vowed never to return to this house. Hopefully I can deliver on that promise. I already scoured the basement. It's the one room Miss Halsey hasn't completely overhauled. Same bare concrete walls, same yellowed linoleum flooring, but no sign of a tunnel. I tapped and banged and prodded, hoping for a false wall or a trap door, but it's all solid. So here I am, kneeling on the floor of what I believe to be the vacant third-floor bedroom, staring at a tiny door that I never knew was here. And playing on a loop in my head is a name, Virginia Ward. The sensible part of me is saying, pick up this tire iron, walk down the stairs, get in your car, and leave. And I want to. I really do. But sensible has never been my forte, and I need to know. Come on! Okay, I'm heading through this door. It's a tight fit. The space seems to stretch back at least 10 or 15 feet, I'm guessing. The ceiling slopes up as it recedes. Actually be able to stand back there. I expected there'd be some kind of storage, old Christmas decorations or something, but there's nothing. God, I'm gonna have to stand in the rain after I get out of here just to get the dust off of me. Wait a second. Just above the door is a drawing. A child's drawing. It's faded, but the artist chose permanent marker for the medium, so it's still legible. Four people. They're lined up in descending height. A mom and dad and two children, a boy and a girl. That sensible part of me is saying it's the family that lived here previous to mine, but my grandfather built this house, and my mom was an only child. This has to be a joke, right? Some town-sized prank designed to make me question my reality? Virginia Ward? Oh, I didn't have a sister. All right, Shelley, I'm going to get out of here. This is stupid. I'm going to get in the car, and I'm going to go. I'm going to take a quick look back here just to make sure I haven't overlooked anything. God, it is taller back here, but oh, it's narrow, too. What is... Ah! Oh. Guess I'm in the basement. It's too dark to... No, not the basement. This ground is stone, and there's no light at all. Wait. Now, up above me, I can see the light from the closet door, but God, that's just not possible. Looks like it's two stories high. I couldn't have fallen that far. Ah, my shoulder. I literally can't see a foot ahead of me. The light on the recorder's glowing, so I know at least that works. Gotta find my flashlight here. Come on. Come on. I have a light, though it's not that helpful. The room, or maybe this is one of the tunnels. It goes on and on. I can't see a wall in any direction. None of this makes any sense. If this is a tunnel, there's no earthly way it was constructed. The whole town would just cave in. I need to find a way out of here. I wish I could tell you what I'm seeing, but even with the flashlight trained straight ahead of me, nothing is coming into view. What was that? Okay, I'm just gonna keep moving forward here. That sounded very, very close. But I can't see anything around me. Okay, keep walking. No problem. Everything's fine. Everything is fine. Something just slammed down behind me. It's about 10 feet back. Looks like a wall. No, not a wall. That looks like skin. And it's pulsating. I can't see the top of it. God, it's receding back into the darkness. It looked like a giant tentacle. What the hell could that be attached to? Maybe I should not find out. Wait, up ahead. Looks like a door. What is that? Oh, come on. That's it. Keep working. Okay. Still working. Shelley, I knocked the batteries out of this thing when I flew into the room. I hope it stays on. It should. The batteries are brand new. Oh, it's official. I'm losing my goddamned mind. I kind of hoped I was sleeping, but my right leg is in just too much pain. I lost the flashlight, but I thankfully don't need it in here. And there's another door, which hopefully leads to more brightly lit rooms, because I have no desire to go back through the door I entered, with or without a flashlight. Did I mention I'm crazy now? Well, I am. Because now, I know that that was a tunnel, but none that exists on Earth. That is some sci-fi insanity for you. So where did this interdimensional portal lead me to? Miskatonic University, I'm sure of it. But not in a biology lab, that would have been convenient. No, my feverish brain has conjured me into Miskatonic's secret library. It's a round room, not very large, more like a study. I don't know where the music is coming from, but it won't stop. There is one single, very comfortable chair. The walls are lined with books, ancient from the look of them, with titles I can't ever fathom having read before. Let me see. The Narcotic Manuscripts, Unersprechlichen Kulten, The People of the Monolith, Cult de Ghoul. Those are just a few of the many that cover the walls. But it's the one in the glass case, locked and the book itself restrained with a triple bolt, that most people have been whispering about for ages. It says Al-Azif on the cover. None of them interest me. But there is a drawer underneath the case. Look at that. A hidden book in a hidden library. Gold filigree title. Nihil
infinitum. This isn't like the one from the cave. It's ornate, made with care, and it is tantalizing. Every part of me is screaming not to touch it, but there's this buzzing in my head, and I know if I just open it and read, it will stop. What I wouldn't give to be a sensible human being. I'm gonna put the voice activation on the recorder. That's at least one sensible thing.
Ah! God help me!
Done horrible things. Unspeakable things. You have to know it wasn't me. I could see and feel it, but I couldn't control it. You have to know I was helpless to stop. I know everything now. The entire awful history. And more. So much more. It hurts to know it. I need to speak quickly. Because even now, I can feel my memories beginning to fade. Miskatonic University should be burned to the ground, so that no one gets hold of those books ever again. Anyone who is seeking them is questing for a link, a transmitter to access other worlds and dimensions. And they're right. That's what the books are. A bridge between our world and an entire multiverse of horrors. But not for humans. That's the great joke. It's for them. The nameless terrors. The old ones. The books allow them into our world. Into our bodies. Maze Eve has been perpetrated by one of them for centuries. The same twisted creature, every generation, residing temporarily in a human host. It makes them do the unthinkable. And as it leaves you and returns to its dimension, it takes your memories with it. Of your actions. Of the victims. Of the children. The tunnels? It uses them. They're everywhere. But they're not tunnels, do you see? They're places where the barriers between our world and theirs have rubbed thin. Gaps between the dimensions that could allow them to come storming into our world. And they're trying. Searching for that opening. And that's the other great joke, Shelley. Maze Eve slakes their thirst. The children are sacrifices. Offerings. It satisfies them and keeps them from pushing too hard to find the cracks in our reality. For a while, anyway. When it took me over, it took complete control. I could see what it sees and think what it thinks, but I was powerless to stop it. So much knowledge. A million worlds and a million species out there just waiting. I know the names of everyone it took over, spanning back to the start. But I also know it wasn't them. Not really. And I'm one of them now. No. Not now. Again. I should never have come back. It was done with me. Why did I come back? Oh, God, Shelley. I've done it before and I couldn't remember. Virginia. My little sister. God damn it. It took so much of my memory. It blotted her out. And the horrible thing I did to her. But that hideous act isn't the worst part of it. It's only my memory that it took. Not the townspeople. They know. They know and accept it.
offering up their children like lambs to the slaughter. My own parents offered her up. It's the way it's always been in Arkham. Right now, the citizens are gathered outside this house. At first, I thought it was to take me and exact revenge, and I was going to let them, but they're here out of gratitude. They look jubilant. God, it's all seeping out of my head so quickly. I have to act soon. I've sent an email to a colleague in Boston. He's going to come here and collect my belongings, including the recorder, which I'm leaving in Virginia's bedroom, in the crawl space, where I am now. Hopefully you'll get it. Hopefully you'll expose this town for what it is. There's one last sacrifice to be made. It'll be a short fall. Maybe in one of those insane dimensions, there'll be forgiveness for me. But I'm not optimistic.
This episode of Dark Destinations was written and produced by Father Malone. Title music was written and performed by Darren Curtis from DarrenCurtisMusic.com. We hope you'll join us next time. Until then, may all your travels lead to dark destinations.